Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Rebound. I'm your host, Elijah Cooper. It's just me today. James, unfortunately, wasn't able to make it due to some scheduling conflicts. But we're still going to get into the hottest topics in basketball. We're going to talk about opening night games, the Raptors and Pelicans, and the Battle of LA. We're going to get into the NBA GM survey that was recently done. Talk about Buddy Hield's contract dispute and some other topics, including yours from Twitter this week. For those of you tuning in, you can find us on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and many other outlets. Make sure you guys follow us at The Rebound Pod on Twitter, where you can see updates on when our most recent shows are going to come out. And also, you know, participate in discussions that we're going to be having on Twitter throughout the week. So make sure you guys go follow us, and let's go ahead and get into some topics. All right, so the first topic we're going to get into is opening night. Tuesday night, the NBA is back, and they are opening up with the defending champion Toronto Raptors hosting the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, this game, a little bit spoiled by the injury that recently was announced to Zion Williamson. Unfortunately, he's going to miss the first few weeks of the season. Unfortunately, we won't get to see his debut on Tuesday night. But it's still a great matchup. We get to see the new-look Pelicans as they take on, you know, a pretty well-constructed Raptors team. And we're going to see how the Raptors are able to live on without Kawhi Leonard. They were able to keep their main core, actually just re-signed Pascal Siakam to a four-year max extension. So it looks like they're really, you know, building around him and the other core pieces that they have there. So that's going to be an interesting matchup to start. We're going to see Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. Those guys get their first look with the New Orleans Pelicans. For me, without Zion being on the floor, I think that's going to be a pretty big impact for that Pelicans team. I think the Raptors are going to come away with, are going to take this game. They have the better experience. I think they're the better built defensive team. And they're going to be defending their home court for the first time since they won the NBA Finals. So it's going to be a big night for them. The crowd energy, that is going to rattle the younger players of the Pelicans a little bit. And I think they're going to be able to come away with that game. Some of the things that I'm looking forward to as far as, you know, some keys is really going to be, you know, has Lonzo Ball improved with his shot where he can be a little bit more effective in scoring? You know, how will he coexist with Jrue Holiday? Will the Pelicans be able to turn Brandon Ingram into the potential offensive player that, you know, people see in him? That's going to be an interesting thing for them as well. And they lost some key players like Julius Randle. How is that going to impact them? Obviously, no Anthony Davis. So how are the Pelicans going to look, you know, after Anthony Davis? And how are these young guys going to gel together in a new environment? For the Raptors, can Pascal Siakam be a go-to guy? Can he be, you know, one of their first or second options along with Kyle Lowry offensively? He really benefited from not having all the attention on him when Kawhi Leonard was there and Kyle Lowry as well. So, you know, those two guys are really going to have to step it up. This Raptors team doesn't really have a definitive go-to guy right now that they can put the ball in their hands. Even, you know, before Kawhi Leonard, they at least had DeMar DeRozan. So it'll be interesting to see if Siakam is going to be that guy for them. So let's move on to the late game Tuesday night, which is the Battle of LA. What most people are probably considering the two best teams in the league after the crazy off seasons that they had. The Lakers were finally able to get Anthony Davis, who you know, they weren't able to get at the trade deadline. There was a lot of turmoil in that. They ended up getting them in the offseason, as everyone knows, him and LeBron forming one of the most dynamic duos in the NBA. And they were really able to fill their roster out really nicely with the additions of the likes of Danny Green, Avery Bradley. You know, they were able to keep Rajon Rondo. They still have Kyle Kuzma, which I thought was the best young player that they had. And they were able to pick up guys like Dwight Howard on cheap contracts. So it's really going to be interesting to see. The Lakers are almost a completely new roster from what they had last year. So many roster turnovers. And they really had a short preseason and training camp to try to get these guys to gel together. And that's going to be, you know, interesting to see how that happens on opening night. And really same with the Clippers. But the difference with the Clippers is they were able to keep their main core. They still have Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams. They still have Landry Shamet, who they acquired in the middle of last season. And still have guys like Montrezl Harrell, Zubac, who they had. Guys who played together for the majority of last season. And now they really just added two stars to the group in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. The interesting thing there is, how are those guys going to coexist? What is going to be the Clippers' best five? Is it going to be, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George at the 3 and 4, or those two at the 2 and the 3, and then, you know, you figure Harrell and Zubac at the 4 and 5? That's really going to be the most interesting dynamic, I think, to that game, is to figure out how those teams manage all of the moving parts that they have. So for me, I'm going to go with the Clippers. I think on opening night, they have the lesser amount of chemistry issues to deal with in that game. And I think they're going to walk away with the win in that one and start off the season on the right foot. But again, you know, that game could go either way. Both of those teams are going to be playing and competing for a title this year. And to get them on opening night is great scheduling by the NBA. Now, we're going to move on to our next topic, which is the NBA's GM survey, something that they do every year. The GMs get together and they vote on various different questions about the NBA, and most specifically the players, and even, you know, top teams in the league. So we'll go through some of the, some of the way that they voted and what teams and players they picked for certain things. And we'll start off with their pick to win the NBA Finals. This year, GMs voted in favor of the Clippers winning the NBA Finals by 46% of GMs voting in favor of the Clippers. Milwaukee was a decently close second at 36%. And the Lakers at 11%. Golden State and Portland also received some title votes as well. But majority of these GMs are picking the Clippers to win it all this year. And, you know, it's looking, you know, that's what most people had to start the year. It's actually the pick that I had was the Clippers. I thought they were the best constructed team after this offseason, even a little bit better than the Lakers. So I'm right there with the Clipper or with the GMs there and the Clippers pick. The Bucks in second, I can see why they, you know, vote that way, because they could be the team representing out of the East, along with probably the Sixers. But I think the Lakers, in my opinion, have the better chance of winning, of beating LA and then winning the NBA, beating the Clippers, I should say. And then winning the NBA Finals over whoever comes out of the East as well, because Bron and AD are just too talented of a duo, really. The next topic that I wanted to get on to from the survey was their pick to win MVP. 52% of NBA GMs selected Giannis Antetokounmpo to win his second MVP in back-to-back seasons. I slightly disagree. I think, you know, last year, part of the reason he was able to win MVP was because of, you know, how he was able to carry the Bucks to a 60-win season, which is the most wins in the NBA. I don't think this year the Bucks will quite have that much success as far as 60 wins. I think they'll be up in the high 50s for sure, but they won't be the best team in the league. And I think that's going to be the reason why he doesn't win MVP. They also had Steph Curry at second. 10% of GMs voted for Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, and Kawhi Leonard, all tied for second at 10%. And again, Steph Curry is who I had in second, you know, for my MVP voting there. So I can't really argue with that. Anthony Davis, certainly you can see him being up there. Not so much Kawhi Leonard. I don't think he's kind of a guy who fills up the stat sheet enough to be in the MVP discussion, even though he's certainly a good enough player to be in that discussion. But, you know, a lot of times you kind of need a more well-rounded stat sheet than what Kawhi Leonard will give you. Plus, he's likely to rest games and not, you know, play a full 82. And then Nikola Jokic came in fifth at 7% as well. James Harden, LeBron, and Damian Lillard all receiving votes as well in the MVP survey. Can't really argue with that. Surprised James Harden was not in the top five, though, especially for someone who puts up the numbers that he does year in, year out. I don't see that changing because of the system that he's in. You know, I can certainly see why they wouldn't pick him to win it, but not in the top five is a little bit surprising to me. As far as the players most likely to have a breakout season, and 19% of NBA GMs picked De'Aaron Fox, also who I had for my breakout player of the year, so can't argue with that. He was followed by Jaren Jackson Jr., Jason Tatum, Brandon Ingram, and Jamal Murray in that top five of players to have a breakout season. Can't argue with any of that there. And then they did best player by each position. They started with point guard. Stephen Curry won it by a landslide. He got 90% of the votes. The next closest was Damian Lillard at 7%, and LeBron got 3% of the votes for the point guard position, which was interesting. Because he also got votes at the small forward position, which we'll get to. But I think they got a dead right here. Listen, you know, I know I'm a Curry fan and might sound a little bit biased, but I just don't think that there's anybody who at the point guard position who is nearly as impactful with Stephen Curry. No one has the resume that he has as far as three championships and two MVPs. And the guy can flat out, you know, be the best player on a championship caliber team, as he's proven in the past prior to KD ever being there. And I think we see that Stephen Curry again this year. At shooting guard, James Harden won the GM's vote by a landslide as well, coming in at 86% of the vote, followed by Paul George at 7%, which, again, you know, if Paul George could be playing a lot of shooting guard this year with Kawhi Leonard on his team, or he could be sliding to the four, so, you know, or Kawhi Leonard could slide to the four, you don't really know how the Clippers are going to line up, so, but I can see why he would get votes there. Surprising that he got votes over, you know, guys like Klay Thompson, who, of course, is dealing with an ACL injury and probably will miss most of the year, but if you're just talking, you know, best shooting guard in the NBA, that's an interesting selection there. At small forward, this one was a little bit tighter, but not as much as you would think. Kawhi Leonard getting 62% of the vote. LeBron came in second at 24%, and Giannis at 14%. Little surprising to see Kawhi Leonard go over LeBron James, and I disagree with that one. For me, I think LeBron has to carry a much bigger load than what Kawhi Leonard has ever had to do. Don't get me wrong, love Kawhi Leonard's game, but I do think he's had the benefit in San Antonio and in Toronto, and even now with the Clippers, of having very talented and well-constructed teams around him, where he hasn't had to distribute the ball or make teammates better because they were already good. So I disagree with the NBA GMs just slightly there. Best power forward, they went with Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you list Giannis as a power forward, then I wholeheartedly agree with that. He got 59% of the vote. Anthony Davis came in second at 28%. Really, in my opinion, it's a toss-up between those two on what kind of player you prefer. Anthony Davis is more of a true power forward, whereas Giannis is more of a point forward that can defend and play the four. But Giannis, to me, has the better passing ability. They're both going to put up similar points per game numbers and rebounds number. I think what separates Giannis is his ability to distribute the ball and make teammates around him better. Whereas Anthony Davis, you know, we've seen him put up ridiculous numbers and losses with the Pelicans. And it, you know, he didn't have the greatest impact on wins and losses. But we'll see if that changes this year with a more talented team around him. And then best center in the NBA went to Nikola Jokic, who got 48% of the vote. And second was Joel Embiid at 28%. And I think that one right there is egregious. And maybe it's my Sixers bias, but I can't understand why anyone would take Jokic over Embiid when you factor in what Embiid is, you know, means to the Sixers defensively as far as his rim protection. Jokic is, if anything, is a defensive liability on that end of the floor. And I get it, he's a better passer, but I don't think he's nearly as dominant as Joel Embiid is, who, you know, is constantly getting to the foul line. He's almost unguardable on the block. I just think, and you know, Joel Embiid can also step out and shoot it, maybe not quite as well as Jokic can, but I definitely disagree there. I think Joel Embiid is a better player overall than Nikola Jokic. All right, so coming up next, we're going to get into Buddy Hield's contract dispute with the Kings. We're going to talk about Brad Beal's extension as well, and then get into John Calipari opposing the draft expansion, and then get into your topics of Twitter. All right, so we've got to talk about Buddy Hield and his contract situation with the Sacramento Kings. Mostly because of some of the comments that he made after one of their preseason games, especially where he comes out and pretty much asks reporters to name one big free agent that came to Sacramento. For those of you that don't know, the Kings have offered him a 4-year, $90 million extension, which isn't the max that he's eligible for. He's eligible for up to $120 million over a 4-year span. He said it felt like an insult, and he feels like he's worth more. And, you know, he wants the franchise to, you know, put their money where their mouth is. They say that he's their guy, and they want them, you know, he wants them to show it. And I am going to have to agree with him. And the main reason is because a guy like Buddy Hield in today's NBA is not easy to find. Only of the 31 players who averaged 20 points per game last year, only Buddy Hield and Stephen Curry shot over 42% from three, which is a pretty high percentage and puts him in a rare class of players. We really saw a big jump from him last year as far as his production, and he was excellent. He ran the floor, got out in transition, and got a lot of those transition threes, you know, from running the wings and getting out ahead of the basketball. And, you know, for someone who shoots it as well as he does, who can also put the ball on the floor and score inside the three-point line, and he's not a defensive liability. You know, he's no defensive stopper, but he's certainly not a liability on that end of the floor. So I think the Kings are going to end up having to, you know, kick out that full max contract, because it's going to be difficult for them to find a player like him. He complements De'Aaron Fox so well, also, you know, as a guy who can play off of the ball, give spot up shooting for for De'Aaron Fox, but he's not one dimensional. Like I mentioned, he can put the ball on the floor, get to the basket, has a good in between and mid range game as well. I mean, you don't average 20 points just by shooting threes in the NBA. So, you know, you definitely got to show this guy a little bit more value as far as what he's worth to that franchise. And the biggest reason I also think that they're going to have to pay him is he's one of the trade assets that you got out of the Boogie Cousins deal. And, you know, other than Buddy Hield, none of those other assets have really amounted to anything so far, you know, other than, you know, the draft picks, which, you know, De'Aaron Fox has been great for them. But I don't think you can afford to lose a 20-point-per-game scorer, you know, through free agency when, you know, you invested in a star player at the time in DeMarcus Cousins in that trade to get him. So, And I think on the open market, Buddy Hield absolutely will get the max that he wants. So the Kings are going to have to realize that and, you know, open up the pockets for him and you know, make sure he's paid and taken care of. Because I think De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield could be a very good backcourt for them and could actually help the Kings get into the playoffs. And then the next contract situation that I want to get into is Bradley Beal, who signed a 2-year extension with the Washington Wizards for $72 million maximum amount in that 2-year extension. It includes a player option in 2022 and 2023. So his total deal now goes up to 4 years, $130 million. And I was quite shocked. And this is something, you know, that we actually wanted to get into in one of our earlier episodes, because he had previously was hesitant to sign an extension with the Wizards because he was worried about the direction of the franchise. And he ends up, you know, signing a 2-year deal and gives himself a player option out. I think it's partially a smart move on his part. I mean, you can't ever blame a guy for getting his money. But the fact that he's giving himself an out as well with a player option is smart, just in case, you know, he wants to end up competing in the future. You know, he has the ability to opt out and go play for a team that can. But I think the biggest thing is with him, you know, re-signing, now the Wizards, you know, won't lose as much value if they have to trade him, you know, if they do decide to go into a full rebuild. So, you know, I think it was a smart move on both ends for the Wizards and for Beal. And really, if Beal, you know, decides that he's not, you know, he's tired of being with a losing organization, he wants to go compete elsewhere, you know, with the way the NBA is moving, he could demand a trade. And now, you know, that he's got a couple more years on his deal, it'll be a little bit easier for Washington to get more back for him as far as his trade value goes. So it's a win-win on both ends. And, you know, definitely want to congratulate him on getting his money. But we'll be interesting to see how that plays out in about a year or two, especially this season. The Wizards are going to be bad, you know, as they don't expect to have John Wall at all this year after the ruptured Achilles during an injury that he was already dealing with. So, you know, it's really going to be just Brad Beal out there by himself for the most part. So for those of you that play fantasy basketball, take Bradley Beal high, because that guy's going to have the ball in his hands a lot this year. Now, the next topic I want to get into is John Calipari talked a little bit about, you know, the ideas that have been floating around for expanding the NBA draft. Now, on our last episode, me and James talked about doing away with the lottery and other options to the draft, but we did not discuss a draft expansion. Calipari came out and said in a press conference that anyone in favor of expanding the draft does not like college basketball and, you know, is doing a disservice to the kids. I wholeheartedly agree with everything he said in the video, and I tweeted that when I saw it. He basically said that expanding the draft, you're essentially just sending kids to, you know, taking kids out of college and sending them to the G League. And that's essentially what you would do with a third round of the NBA draft or anything past that. You know, second round picks are struggling to make rosters as is, and adding a third round, those guys almost have no shot at making an NBA roster if, you know, mid to late second rounders are fighting for their spots. So I'm definitely against it. I think really what they need to do is to let kids start coming out of high school again. There are plenty of kids who have been talented enough to do it. You know, Zion Williamson had no business playing college basketball last year. He was a man amongst boys. He should have been, you know, spending that rookie year in the NBA. Regardless, you know, if your issue is with the one and done thing and you want kids to stay in school longer, adding another round of the draft is not going to help with that. And you're actually going to be doing kids a lot of, like Calipari said, you're going to be doing those kids a disservice, you know, having them go into the draft, leaving school early. At least if you stay in school for 4 years, you end up with a degree out of it. As of right now. But if you leave early, you're a third round pick, you play in the G League for a couple of years, you get waived, and then what? You know, and the G League doesn't quite pay players enough for them to, you know, really survive long term off of, you know, that money. So I highly, I really agree with Calipari and his, you know, the points that he made there. And really hope the NBA doesn't entertain any kind of draft expansion. And then the last thing we want to get into for today's show was your topics from Twitter. This one came from one of my players at Columbia High School. Shout out to my guy, Carter Houck, actually my most improved player at Columbia High School last year. He wanted us to talk about James Harden's one-legged three-point shot. Now, this is something that I've talked about on the timeline a lot since he started doing it. And it looked good in the pickup games, because it was going in, don't get me wrong. But it looked like, at least in the preseason a couple of times, he was thinking about maybe doing it in real games this year. And I think he might just. And I don't really understand it. I don't get the purpose of it. I don't see why a sidestep, you know, step back doesn't get the same production for you. That way you have 2 feet on the ground and you're on balance. I think shooting it one-legged is going to have his shots pretty erratic. And I know, you know, the more you work on it, obviously the higher percent that you're going to make it. And if he knocks it down at a high enough percentage, don't get me wrong, you know, go ahead and shoot it. But to me, it doesn't create more separation than, you know, what a sidestep or a step back would. And because you're, you know, affecting your balance, obviously it's going to make that shot a little bit lower percentage. So I'm really interested to see if he does it, how much he does it, and if he has any success with it. Listen, I could be wrong. I've seen crazier things happen in sports. People probably thought Dirk's one-legged fadeaway from mid-range was crazy. And that really worked out well for him. So if if he can knock it down with any kind of consistency, it's going to, you know, open up a lot for him possibly this season. All right, well, that's all that we had for today's show. Thank you again, guys, for tuning in to another episode of The Rebound. We, you know, appreciate you guys giving us, you know, your time and giving us your feedback on Twitter and everything like that. So thank you guys for that. Again, if you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us at The Rebound Pod. You can also follow me at EL1_Coop and follow James as well at Life_Gamble3 on Twitter. Interact with us, send us your topics, let us know what you guys want to get into and what you guys want to hear from us on the podcast. We may even have you come on the show and discuss it with us if we like it enough. So, you know, feel free to send in your tweets and your topics. Opening night on Tuesday should bring about some interesting things for us to discuss on the next episode. As far as when we post, it's going to change a little bit. We'll try to structure it around. We're going to try to structure it around the major games throughout the week. So, you know, we can talk about those with you afterwards and, you know, do some game reviews, things like that. So, again, thank you guys for tuning in. You can find us on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcast, Pocket Cast, Breaker, you know, any of those places where you can access podcasts. And, well, this is me signing off. Y'all be cool. Y'all be cool. All right. Water.